TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
It is indeed Raised by Wolves, another edition. Manny Hill, Danny Cunningham here with you on ScoreNorth.com, the Score North mobile app. If you have not downloaded the Score North mobile app yet, we highly encourage you to do so. Danny, Tuesday was fun.
Tuesday was a wild, chaotic, everything we ever could have imagined lottery night. I think it's everything the NBA wanted. I know it was most things that I wanted. It was absolutely terrific. I want it again. I'm ready for the 2020 draft lottery, Manny. I'm ready to start running my tankathon simulations for that lottery, and we don't know who's going to be in it yet.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's funny when they revealed that the Cavs were going to get the fifth pick. I thought, okay, well, it obviously meant the Lakers were going to be in the top four.
Well,
there was a split second where I thought, oh my God, the Lakers are going to win this thing.
Well, when the Wolves fell to 11, you knew the Lakers were in the top four at that point. Like, you knew
right.
They jumped all the way up. But you knew it was Knicks, Lakers, Pelicans, Grizzlies. One of my favorite things was at the New York Knicks official draft lottery watch party, because all these bad teams have one of those. They showed the reaction when the Lakers came up fourth. Like, the place went freaking nuts. And there's like a 10-second pause between when the Lakers are announced as fourth and then the crowd is cheering, and then it's the New York Knicks third, and the place goes silent. It goes from being just absolutely insane to you can hear a pin drop. It was awesome.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I have to troll my cousin because my cousin's a big Knicks fan. And, I mean, he's already been like sour anyway because,
well, how could you not be,
right? Because he just hates James Dolan. I told him, I said, well, you know, you're probably going to get KD and Kyrie this summer, you know, what's the big deal? But he's just like, oh, it's the Knicks, they're going to screw it up anyway. So
I mean, they might, but they're probably still going to get those guys. They can screw it up, but they're probably going to get those guys. They'll probably get Carmelo too, and that'll be the thing.
So what are the Wolves going to do at 11 here?
There are a couple different guys that I really like, that a few that probably will be available, a couple that might be available, and then a few that are less likely to be available, but you never know. Darius Garland's a guy that I think his stock's kind of risen in the past couple of weeks. He went to Vanderbilt, only played 6 games, had a torn meniscus in his knee. I would love him at 11. I don't think he'll be there. I think he's gone. I can't see him still being around at 11, but there are a few other guys that I do think will be there. It wouldn't stun me if Cam Reddish is available at 11. I don't know that I like him that much. I think that he could be the next Andrew Wiggins. We don't know. But I think he might be available at 11. And the name that I keep coming back to is Brandon Clark, power forward from Gonzaga. I know I've talked about him a few times. He's 6'8", 215 pounds. He's older. He's almost 23 years old. He'll be 23 before he plays an NBA game. He's basically a do-it-all front court player, other than the fact that he doesn't have much of an outside shot. But he's a terrific passer. He's great in the pick and roll. He can handle the ball. He's an awesome defender. I think he's a guy that would be a great complement to Cat's game. So he's someone I look for that should be available at 11 for the Wolves. But the fact that they drop down, even that one spot, does hurt.
I feel like Clark is a guy that could step in and make some form of an impact right away.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that part of him being almost 23 right now means that he's more of a win-right-now player. He's not a guy that you should have to wait on to develop. Now, that means his ceiling might not be as high as some other guys, but it also means that you should be able to get the best out of him sooner than later. And when the clock is running on Cat, that matters.
Yeah. Why do you think Garland shot up so many people's draft boards like this without having played a lot of college basketball?
Because I think that the comparisons are very real for guys. Like, he could turn into a Damian Lillard type of player. He's someone that can create his own shot. He can score from anywhere on the floor, and he's very raw still, but the potential there is really exciting to see. I think that despite only playing, I think it was 6 games at Vanderbilt. I think that's what the final number was after he got hurt, but despite that, he showed flashes in those games. Now, granted, a lot of them were against weaker competition, but he showed flashes of being a guy that absolutely translates to the next level, and I'm pretty high on him.
It seems like that's exactly the kind of player the Wolves need, though, right?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
They need, because of all, I mean, aside from all the question marks that are surrounding the point guard position for this team right now anyway, like, You insert that guy in, and it would probably take some time for him anyway, but you insert a guy that has a chance to be very dynamic and can shoot from anywhere and all of that. Like, that is the type of thing that if he reaches his full potential could really, really change the landscape of this team.
I will say another guy that I am excited for that could potentially be there for 11 at the Wolves is Coby White, point guard, kind of a combo guard from North Carolina. Pretty good shooter that he's got NBA range. He's incredibly fast when you think speed, maybe not quite De'Aaron Fox, but like Colin Sexton, who it took some time in Cleveland for him to adjust to the NBA game, but he still showed flashes of just being super quick and great in transition. I think Coby White it's going to be that type of player. I would really like him in the Wolves' backcourt, too.
I'm looking at a mock draft right now on NBADraft.net. I mean, there's a bunch of mock drafts out there. But
including version 6.0 from Danny Cunningham at ScoreNorth.com.
That was released this morning. I have to check that out. Right now, they've got Coby White going 5 to the Cavs.
I don't know if I would like that fit, although I will say Coby White's hair and Colin Sexton's hair would make for the best backcourt hair in the NBA. Would not be close. They essentially have the same hair. I think Coby White's I don't know if it's really an afro, but it's like whatever it is, it's bigger than Colin Sexton's.
It's like a blowout fro type of thing.
Yeah, I don't know what to call it, but you can look it up. Google Coby White. It's Coby White. Coby White and Colin Sexton would make for the best backcourt hair pairing in the NBA, maybe in NBA history. It would be phenomenal to see. And they'd be incredibly fast. I think Coby White's probably a reach at 5.
Yeah, I think he's a reach.
Like, say the Wolves would have gone 4, would have landed the number 4 pick. So say they would have been the Lakers instead.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would have been pushing for them to draft Darius Garland, even though I feel like that's probably a bit of a reach there. I think he's someone that maybe projects to be a 6 or 7 overall type guy, but when you've got the 4th pick, it's about fit, and if he fits there, and this isn't necessarily a super deep draft, who cares if you're overdrafting at 4? What are you missing on? A DeAndre Hunter, who I don't know how good of a fit he is. Cam Reddish, who I'm not high on.
Yeah.
Jarrett Culver, I'm not high on. RJ Barrett's already off the board. Obviously, Zion and John Morant are gone by now. So take the best guy for your fit there. Like, I think it would be Darius Garland at 4, but obviously that doesn't matter because they're at 11.
It seems like with this draft that, I mean, you've got Zion at 1, clearly head and shoulders above everybody else.
Sure.
And then it seems like that second tier is Ja and RJ.
Yep.
And then like after that it's just sort of just throw everybody in the bucket and just sort of pull a guy out and this guy might be really good and this guy might be a complete bust. And it's hard to tell.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think the best way to think about this prospect pool is in terms of tiers, and you laid it out correctly, where it's Zion, and then there's a little bit of a gap, and then it's Ja Morant and RJ Barrett, and then there's a pretty sizable gap between the second tier and the third tier, which I don't want to say it's everybody else, but that third tier's got, you know, Jarrett Culver, Cam Reddish, Darius Garland, Coby White, DeAndre Hunter, Jackson Hayes, Brandon Clark, like, they're all third tier guys.
So
it's not as if you're really missing out. If you're drafting 4th overall, taking a third tier guy makes sense, and I don't think it makes sense. Maybe this guy is like a more of a 7th overall pick than a 4th overall pick. At that point, who cares, because they're all pretty similar.
Is your guy David Griffin going to be able to convince Anthony Davis to want to stay?
He's going to try his damnedest. He's going to give it a shot. I don't know that it'll happen. I'm not sure at this point it's a smart thing to do. Not because Anthony Davis isn't this MVP caliber guy, but if you expect Zion Williamson to be the same type of thing, it is going to take Zion some time to develop, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to instantly be an all-NBA guy. Likely, he won't be that. So if it takes 2 or 3 years for him to get there, Anthony Davis is going to be 29 or 30 by then.
Yeah,
is
he
going to stick around and wait? Does he have the patience? He's already run out of patience. I think it might make sense to, because you have Zion, hand him the keys of the franchise. Build around him. Get as many draft assets and younger pieces to surround Zion right now. And then 3 or 4 years from now, you could be looking at a team that's a Western Conference finalist or something like that.
And it already kind of feels like AD's just already, like, gone. You know what I mean? It just feels like he's not even – in some ways, he almost feels like a free agent. Now, there's limited – places where he could end up, because obviously he's still under contract and teams would have to trade for him. But it does just kind of, it almost seems like it's almost a Kyrie type of situation where he's just, he's already out the door, and it just, the idea of him being back in New Orleans next year just doesn't really, it just doesn't really seem like it's going to happen at all.
Yeah, I would be shocked. And honestly, it might make sense to deal him to the Lakers or the Knicks, because if you can end up with two picks in the top four here, you're in a pretty good place. If you could get Zion and RJ Barrett, or Zion and Darius Garland, or whoever else, that's a pretty good young core to build around. And speaking of the Knicks at three, I don't think, if they do get Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, I think they need to trade RJ Barrett. Mm-hmm. I think you're looking at a situation very similar to what the Cavs had in 2014 when they had LeBron. LeBron came back and they had Kyrie. It was never going to work with Andrew Wiggins, because RJ Barrett's a ball dominant guy who has never played off the ball in his life. I mean, you think anywhere he's been, whether it's been AAU or high school up in Canada or at Duke, he's always been a ball dominant player. Well, when you're 19 years old and you're playing with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, you can't be a ball dominant player, because those guys are ball dominant players. And I'm sorry, when those two are around, you got to take a back seat here. So I don't know that it makes sense for him to ever play for the Knicks if they actually have the summer that they're anticipating having.
So if you're the Knicks and you have the third pick, and let's say you end up with RJ Barrett with that third pick, what sort of package are you throwing at the Pelicans to try and get AD?
I mean, it's RJ Barrett. It's a future first round pick. It is Dennis Smith Jr. It might have to be Mitchell Robinson. Yeah. It is Alonzo Trier. It is every young legitimate asset that you have. Probably the Dallas first round picks that you got for Kristaps Porzingis. You are giving as much as you can to try and end up with Anthony Davis. I don't know how likely the Pelicans are to pull the trigger on it. I think that they may be able to find some better deals, like maybe the Clippers, if they do get Kawhi Leonard in free agency. That might be a place for Anthony Davis to land via trade.
Yeah, the Lakers, which will be in the conversation too.
Of course, and Boston might be in the conversation depending on Kyrie Irving. But I think that the Clippers could make a lot of sense.
How much power does he have in this situation too? I'm very intrigued by that, because
he lost some power on Tuesday night. I'll say that. He lost some power on Tuesday night. The Pelicans hold more cards right now than they previously did, because the thought was, oh, if the Knicks win the lottery, they can trade Zion for Anthony Davis. If the Lakers win the lottery, they can trade Zion for Anthony Davis. Or if whoever, you know, that could be a piece to trade for Anthony Davis. Well, who got that piece without having to give up Anthony Davis? The Pelicans did. So they hold more cards now than they did entering Tuesday night, and that is a big deal. I don't think that it is going to change anything, but I do think that it is to their benefit.
Do you think the Wolves will do anything out of the norm on draft night, or you think it's too soon for Gerson Rosas to try and make a big splash?
I don't think it's too soon, but I don't know him well enough in the way that he wants to shape this team well enough to really truly give an accurate comment on that right now. I think I would expect them to pick at 10. I just don't think that they have the assets to move up. I don't know that there's a player worth moving up for outside of the top three, and you certainly aren't moving up into the top three with what you have as draft assets right now.
Right.
So I would expect them to pick at 11 right now. I think that they will end up turning the card in at number 11 overall. I would be kind of surprised if they don't.
So you've got some of the other teams in the lottery that, you know, maybe have moved down. Chicago moved down. Phoenix obviously moved down. And how are you feeling if you're those teams? It has to kind of suck.
You're disappointed. You really are disappointed. I mean, if you're the Cavs or the Suns, you won 19 games this year with the hope that Zion Williamson would be wearing your uniform next year.
Yeah.
If you're the Bulls, you won, I think, 21 or 22 games this year with the hopes that Zion Williamson would be wearing your uniform next year. So for those teams to drop – you have to be pretty disappointed. The Hawks, I don't think, are as disappointing because obviously they were a better team than those other places.
Mm-hmm.
But adding Zion to that group in Atlanta would have been an absolute game changer. So they do have to be a little disappointed. But they, at the end of the day, they have two top 10 picks. I don't think they can be too upset. Boston has to be pretty disappointed that Memphis jumped up, although it could reap benefits in the future. But they could have ended up with two picks in the lottery as well.
Who are the two biggest winners? Was it just the top two teams, you think?
I have to think so. I think that there's a real possibility that Tuesday night saved the franchise in New Orleans.
Mm.
That's not a place that has a very strong fan base. Anthony Davis wanted out. Without Anthony Davis, why would anyone go to Pelicans games? I think it's a legitimate possibility that that team could have been up for relocation a couple years from now. The ownership situation is in question. They're the clear number two behind the New Orleans Saints there. I mean, you can make an argument that LSU gymnastics matter to people more in New Orleans than the Pelicans do. And now they've got Zion. They've got this guy that is looked at as a franchise savior. And it's kind of a get-out-of-jail-free card for some of the mistakes that they've had. So I think that they're by far the biggest winner of this draft. I think the Grizzlies jumping up six spots to get John Morant's a big winner, too, because they're probably going to look to deal Mike Conley to try and recoup some draft assets. They do owe a future first-round pick to Boston. It is top six protected next year and then unprotected in 2021. So, and drafting John Morant, who it's been reported by ESPN that they have locked in their focus on, drafting him kind of creates the need to move Mike Conley. And yeah, you'll get off his contract and you'll get cheaper, but you can also recoup some draft assets too. So I think that that's another team that's a big winner.
If you're New Orleans, do you try and move Drew Holiday?
I would be gauging the market for him, yes. Mm-hmm. I don't know that how motivated I am to move him, but I'm gauging the market for him for sure. And it depends what you get for Anthony Davis. I think you have to figure out the Anthony Davis situation first, because if you get R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson, it doesn't really make a whole ton of sense to have Drew Holiday on the roster at that point. Just embrace the young movement and try and flip Drew Holiday for a first-round pick, which he's absolutely worth. He's probably worth two of them.
Zion and RJ would probably, they'd probably like to play together again.
Yeah, it'd be fun to watch at the NBA level.
All right, let's transition to the playoffs, the conference finals, very quickly before we get out of here. Bucks Raptors last night.
Awesome.
I mean, I'm rooting for Toronto because I would love to see Kawhi. And you know, I don't know how likely it is that Kawhi stays there anyway, but I would love anything that increases Kawhi's chances of staying there. So I want to see the Raptors get to the finals.
Well, and I'm rooting for their fan base because they've had so many years where they've had some really, really good teams in Toronto.
Yeah.
And LeBron James has just sucked their dreams away for the past three postseasons. I mean, I want good things for that fan base. And I would like to see Toronto win the NBA title this year. I really would. I think that'd be an awesome outcome for the NBA.
I'm totally with you on that. But last night, whew, my God, that was a great game last night.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a roller coaster. It was back and forth. I mean, Toronto looked like first half. It looked like Toronto was going to run away with it, and you know, and then Brooke Lopez just started. Brooke Lopez, this Brooke Lopez shooting threes thing is just like the funniest thing for me. Because
it's also funny because how the Bucks discovered it and things like that. And he's played so well, he's probably priced himself out of their price range for next year.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, he's making threes, but like when he misses, it looks awful when he misses. But then he'll turn around and hit like three in a row.
Yeah.
I mean, and he saved them last night.
Yeah, he was the reason they won the game last night. And it showed us the Raptors just don't have a lot of room for error against this team. But I do think that this is going to be a long, very interesting series between Milwaukee and Toronto.
You think Toronto can still win it?
Absolutely. I picked them in seven. I didn't have a ton of confidence in it, but I have been on Toronto from the day they acquired Kawhi. I thought that mm-hmm. was a team that was going to win the East, and they've got this far. I can't bail right now. So I picked, that's a majority of the reason why I picked them in seven. I absolutely think that they can still win it. I mean, the Bucks won game one at home. You're supposed to do that. It was a close game. It does not feel great if you're Toronto when you wasted a 7 3-pointer outing from Kyle Lowry that you're probably not going to get again.
Yeah.
You also didn't have the best game from Kawhi Leonard, and I think you'll get better out of him moving forward in this series. So Toronto still absolutely has a chance to win this series.
Yeah, it does feel like they kind of wasted a great playoff performance from Kyle Lowry, because we know that at least the narrative surrounding him has been he just has always sort of shrunk in the playoffs and not performed very well.
But last night he was awesome.
Last night he was fantastic, and they ended up not winning the game. The thing I'm wondering about with Toronto is, and I know it's the playoffs and you shorten your bench and everything, but I wonder if Nick Nurse has to manage Kawhi's minutes a little bit better, because you could tell, like, at the end of the third quarter, Kawhi was just gassed.
But they
can't afford. Yeah, but they can't they afford have to have him on the bench. That's the tough
it's
part.
It's like so. Bill Simmons during Game 7, and I know you and I haven't had the opportunity to talk. We haven't had the opportunity to even talk about Game 7 between
the
Raptors
itself,
and the Sixers,
yes.
Which was bonkers.
Yeah.
But Bill Simmons, obviously CEO of the Ringer, whatever. He tweeted during Game 7.
I saw this,
because
yeah.
Joel Embiid had played 33 of the first 36 minutes, and he tweeted, "Did Brett Brown not get the memo to not run Joel Embiid into the ground?" And
it's
I
like
quoted
it's game
it.
Game 7, dude.
I quoted it. I said, "No, Brett Brown got the memo that his team cannot survive with Embiid on the bench, and he might get fired if he loses." And obviously, they've come out and said his job's safe, but there was a question at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the memo he got. There's no game eight, buddy.
Yeah.
Like, you have to play. And with Kawhi, you have to think about a lot of these games is you sat him 22 games this season.
Yeah.
You prepared him to be well-rested for these moments. There's no tomorrow. If you got to play him 43 minutes, 44, 45 minutes, you have to do it.
And I'm not even saying give him fewer minutes, but I'm just wondering, like, at the end of the third quarter, if there's a minute left in the third quarter, can you
steal
him?
One?
Can you steal a minute, and can you survive that last minute of the third quarter just to give him a little bit of a blow so that he has a little bit more in the tank for the fourth quarter, so that you can throw him out there for the entire fourth?
Yeah, that's part of the thing, too, is that the way Milwaukee rotates Giannis in, and Giannis, his minutes were high last night at 37, and I thought that the Raptors actually did a pretty good job on him. His field goal attempts, he only took 16 shots, which I think is whether or not he makes them. If you limit his shot attempts, I think you're in pretty good shape if you're the Raptors, and that's exactly what they did by keeping him 7 for 16.
They zoned up on him, basically, and
just
said,
I thought that their game plan on Giannis was solid. But I would maybe like to see Nick Nurse match Kawhi's minutes to Giannis's a little bit more, where Giannis plays like the first 4 or 5 minutes of the game and then heads to the bench. Maybe try and steal a couple minutes of rest for Kawhi right there.
Yeah, it just seems like, because last night it just seemed like Kawhi was just, by the time they got to the fourth quarter, Kawhi just had, at least for that night, just had nothing left. It just looked like he was completely gassed. And that hurt them, because he gave them nothing in the fourth quarter, and it kind of ended up costing them the game. So any thoughts on the Western Conference Finals? This is not
I'm
gonna,
so
this is
bored
not
with
be,
it, man.
I know.
It's like, it's,
yeah.
I really like when I really like the Eastern Conference Finals, but as much as I love that series between Toronto and Milwaukee, I kind of feel the 100% opposite way. I love how Portland got there. I love how they beat Denver in Game 7.
CJ
McCollum
was so
awesome.
Great. Oh, my God.
Everything.
He was great.
Watching someone else from Northeast Ohio have a chase down block in a Game 7 was awesome.
That was great.
But it also, like,
they're overmatched.
They're so overmatched. They need to change their defensive strategy. They can't drop in the pick and roll against Steph Curry. Like, you can't have Enes Kanter below the free throw line and have Steph Curry coming off a screen as the ball handler into a wide open three. Like, you just can't do that. You have to change your way that you do that. And I can't see how Portland gets more than one game in this series. I really can't. As much as I wish it were a long series that would give us an exhilarating game 6, game 7, I can't see how that happens.
I did love the quote from Terry Stotts after the game, though, that somebody asked him about defending against Steph, like, you know, dropping off of Steph, and he basically said, like, well, they were trapping him in game six, the Rockets were trapping him, and he got 33 points in the second half. So, I mean, it's...
But they also trapped him in the first half, and he got no points.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, yeah, one of the greatest shooters ever got hot. That doesn't mean that it's the Rockets played the wrong defense. I think that trapping him is the right way to go, especially without Kevin Durant. It's worked in the past. That's a big way the Cavs beat the Warriors back in 2016, because they trapped Steph Curry really well, and Harrison Barnes wasn't very good in that series. That's a big reason why they won a title and the Warriors aren't going for their fifth straight championship. But trapping him is absolutely the right call here. The Blazers just don't really have the personnel to do it.
When do you think we'll see KD again?
In the finals, because I think that he could play in this series.
They don't need him to win this series.
If say this happens, the Warriors win game two tonight. Mm-hmm. Say they drop game three in Portland and it's 2-1 with game four in Portland. The Blazers have a legitimate chance to tie this up at home and make it in a legitimate series.
You think then that maybe
you could maybe see KD for game four, but unless if the Warriors are up 3-0. I don't see how it happens. But if the Blazers get a game before game four, if the Blazers win tonight or game three, I think we see Kevin Durant in this series. If the Warriors go up 3-0, we see him in the finals.
All right. Good talk. The draft lottery is in the books. The Wolves will pick 11th. And we'll see how things go over the next couple of weeks. I guess more so month before the actual NBA draft happens. Follow all of that stuff and Danny's writings on ScoreNorth.com. Download the Score North mobile app if you have not done that already. For Danny Cunningham, follow him at RealDCunningham on Twitter. I'm Manny Hill. Follow me at MannyHill84. Download this podcast anywhere you find podcasts. ScoreNorth.com, Apple, Spotify, various different places you can find this podcast. And again, check out that Score North mobile app. That has been another edition of Raised by Wolves. I'm Manny Hill. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.